Loudburst. Just what you want to hear.
Some stories want to be told, and some don't.
This is a story that happened to us, rather than the one we chose to tell.
We'll leave it up to you to decide whether this is a story that should have been told, or one that shouldn't.
But it's what happened, and it happened to us. What you're about to hear is the record of a story we discovered whilst we were investigating something else, looking the other way, as it were, and how that story then turned out to be every bit as strange and as unsettling as the thing we originally set out to look for.
I'm Joel Morris.
And I'm Will McLean. And this is Broken Veil.
Episode 1, Monsters.
If this story begins anywhere, it begins last winter. Will and I were having one of those periods of downtime that all writers have, and this was an especially long one. The entire UK TV industry, in which both of us work, was in an enormous slump, and as there was nothing else to do, we began looking up for something new and fun we could make. And so we decided, like most men of a certain age, to do a podcast. I mean, it was either that, take up squash, or go LARPing.
As we both have a long-standing interest in the paranormal, the weird, and the strange, we decided to do something in that area. This is, in many ways, a conversation that's been going on between the two of us for years. I'm very into this stuff, and in the immortal words of Fox Mulder, I want to believe.
Whereas I'm very much more on the sceptical side of things. Although I will admit to being tantalised by the possibilities that these paranormal stories open up.
We were not so much interested in ghosts, UFOs and the like, as we were in the really peculiar stories that people tell. Things that imply that in certain places, under certain conditions, the veil of reality breaks and we see something truly inexplicable. Something that the person involved can never reduce in their mind to a clear solution.
As you'll imagine, these tales are hard to come by, and the few really famous ones out there turn out to have already been the subject of a million podcasts. So we needed something fresh, something no one had looked into before, and we couldn't find one, so we promptly forgot about it. And then, as so often in life, the answer came when we weren't looking. And as always in life, it came to us in the pub. A bunch of us, writers, actors and comedians, were sitting in a London boozer, grabbing a rare chance to meet face to face. And I started to talk about our podcast idea, and happened to mention the kind of thing we were looking for. While everyone else made jokes about it, this was a room mostly full of comedy writers after all, one of our friends, an actor called Tony, started to look distinctly uneasy. And later that evening, when people had left and the pub had thinned out a bit, he told us that he had exactly the kind of story we were looking for. One which left him shaken, unsettled, and questioning just what exactly had happened to him. He agreed to let us record him, and 2 weeks later, in the freezing first weeks of the new year, he told us the full story.
When did this happen?
It's 2006, so I was fairly new actor. I'd done lots of telly, comedy stuff, but the idea of a film was still pretty exciting. And I got a call, it was a call out of the blue from my agent saying, I've got a part in a film. It was just sort of straight offer. I assume someone pulled out. That's normally the way these things happen when it's this last minute. And I don't know if many people know, but before you do a film, you have to do loads of stuff. There's lots of kind of admin, filling out forms and wig fittings and costume fittings, that sort of stuff. And one of the things you have to do often, at least sort of once every couple of years, is go for a medical. And I think it was my time for my MOT. Right. It's just like that, it's for insurance. So I said, fine, and just sort of wrote down the address and what day it was, what time it was, and then hung up. And it wasn't until after that I finished the call, because it was sort of American money and all of that. So I was excited. So I wasn't asking questions. I was just saying yes. And it wasn't until after I realised I looked at what I'd written down, it was, oh yeah, the address isn't in London.
In fact, it's miles outside London. But Tony doesn't give the matter too much thought.
After all, as a young actor, he's been for costume fittings and the like all over the southeast. Maybe this is just how it is for big films.
So, yeah, the day came round and I jumped in the car and headed out. I'm East London, so I sort of went north, out into Essex, which is, it's a bit of the world I know a bit. You know, it's, I'm more South Essex, but I know Essex a bit. But it was quite far out. It was sort of, it took a while.
As Tony nears his destination, it's not long before the unfamiliar surroundings and the lack of any real landmarks start to have a disorienting effect.
When you go out that part of Essex, it's quite flat and it's quite monotonous and samey.
Yeah.
Lots of very long straight roads, very flat, quite dull, all marshlands and, you know, weird fields and farmers and stuff. But so anyway, I got to sort of near where this place was supposed to be. I knew I had to come off with this roundabout. And what was weird about the roundabout was there were three blind turnings. There was nothing on three turnings on the roundabout, which was quite odd. It was sort of like this weird roundabout to nowhere, but there was, right, the fourth turning was the turning I had to take. And I remember noticing, because I hadn't seen any, there was nothing really, it was quite featureless. I remember noticing this old, sort of old dead tree. It looked like it had sort of been burnt out, it was hollow. You know, I noticed it, you know. There was nothing else you'd see, I'd seen really along that bit of the route. I was thinking, right, where the hell am I?
Swallowing his misgivings, Tony takes the turning of the burned out tree and follows the road.
And there, finally, is the place he's supposed to report to.
It was a strange building. It was sort of quite big, single-storey building. It was modern, kind of, quite utilitarian, right, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing special, quite featureless. So I went in through the door, and there was a receptionist there, and I said, I'm here for the medical. I'm not sure she actually even said anything. She just sort of pointed at the chairs. Felt a bit rude, and sort of, you know, sit down. So I did, and sat down and waited.
So Tony finds himself, in very short order, in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by people who are, if not unfriendly, then certainly weirdly indifferent to him.
But he's still telling himself that this is all fine. He's trying to ignore the rising feeling of wrongness this whole episode is giving him.
So I sat there for, well, it must have been like 15 minutes or so, just thinking to myself, and then she said, oh, you can go down now. So I sort of like looked around to where and saw that there was a staircase. So I started wandering down these stairs and then more stairs, and it was just sort of all breeze block, quite bare. You know, there was a fire escape, but that was locked. So you just could only go one way. There was no way to go wrong. You just had to keep going down the stairs. It was the only way to go until I got to the bottom. As I say, it was like one story, so it was all below ground.
Yeah,
it was straight down, which was, you know, I guess, in retrospect, quite odd, but, you know, at the time, I'm just thinking, get this medical done, I'm in a movie, I'm excited.
Tony reaches the bottom of the stairwell, now several stories underground in this peculiar place. And if he's expecting a more comforting environment, that's not what awaits him.
There's this corridor, and one thing I remember very clearly about it is it was blue and yellow, you know, completely different colouring to the rest of the place, but I noticed that it was quite a long corridor, so I started walking along that. It wasn't deserted, you know, there were people working there, wandering around, none of them paying me any attention. So I just kept walking, and there was not really anywhere to go other than keep following the corridor.
Yeah.
Until I sort of bumped into someone, and she said, oh, are you here for the medical? I said, yes, I am, yeah. So she led me off to a door, and there was a sign on the door. I didn't quite catch what it said, but anyway, I was taken in. I assume it said doctor. I don't know what it said. And sat down. It was a pretty standard sort of doctor's room, surgery. The doctor came in and started doing blood pressure and reflexes, check my, you know, that sort of stuff.
At this point, Tony's just relieved to be finally having the medical, but this little moment of normality doesn't last long.
First really weird thing happened, which was two women came in. The thing that was really striking was they both looked very similar, like they could be related, but one was older and one was younger. And they didn't say hello. I said hello because, you know, trying to make friends with everyone. And they just sort of didn't say hello, went and sat down and just kind of watched me as I was having this medical done. the way they were looking at me was sort of like you would look at a fire, like their eye was drawn to me, or a pub in a pub telly, like they were just sort of regarding me rather than, you know, it was very odd. So I was, you know, that was putting me up. Anyway, I got on with the rest of the medical, and they did all of the tests they needed to do, and they then kind of said, so what, you can go now. So off I went, back into the weird corridor, up all the stairs, out, back to my car, and I was like, oh, thank Christ, I'm away from here.
At last, Tony finds himself outside again, but the situation is starting to get to him.
So when I came out of the building, I was feeling uneasy. I just wanted to get away, really, so I didn't hang around. And what I did notice was, as I was leaving, I can't remember the name of the company. It was some sort of nondescript, bland, something enterprises. Or right. I can't remember.
Yeah.
What I do remember was there was a logo that looked slightly out of place. It was an odd... It didn't look... childish isn't right. It wasn't... It stood out as not fitting in with it. It was, I don't know, it's hard to describe it. It was sort of six straight lines, one of them broken. So, I don't know, it was just, it struck me. It was something I noticed, yeah.
So Tony drives back to London, all the while his thoughts dominated by the strangeness of what he's just experienced.
The weird location for a routine medical, the surreal one-story building with its underground levels.
And most of all, the two peculiar, silent women who found him so fascinating.
He's glad to leave it all behind and get back to his normal life in London.
So anyway, I came home and I had a shift that night in the pub. So I was exhausted by the time I got home after the whole day there and then working. I went straight to sleep.
But the weird experiences Tony has been subjected to today aren't finished with him yet.
And then I had the worst nightmare I've ever had. It was, like, really horrible. And it was all focused on the interior of this building. I don't remember my dreams that often, and I don't, certainly not nightmares. When I was a kid, maybe, but not really at all. So that's why it really stood out, because, and the dream was all about that building, the interior, and specifically the corridors, and not being able to get away from them or out of the building. So every time I was in the dream going down the corridor, I'd turn and there would be another corridor. Yeah, the blue and yellow corridor. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. I couldn't escape, and it was like it was forming around. Mm-hmm. And there'd be, every now and then as I walked down the corridor, on a door there'd be that logo again, that symbol.
Right, that same
one. Yeah, the same one. And it was a six lines with the broken line, and it was... It was a real sense of dread and unease, and trying to escape, but that wasn't just it. There was a sort of a real, really awful feeling in that dream. It was a never-ending corridor. It was like a maze. So I woke up, and I put it down to, you know, I haven't had an actor's stress dream for a while, but that's what that was. A bit more terrifying than the usual. I've forgotten my lines, or I'm naked on stage kind of stuff. But it was... I thought about it a lot that day. It had got to me.
Tony tries to put the whole thing behind him, but the after effects of his day out are proving very hard for him to shake off.
So the next day, normal day again, went to sleep that night, had exactly the same dream again. In the corridors, the yellow and blue corridors. And I had this quite a lot for a while, this dream would pop up.
What's the feeling? Is it like sort of unease?
Unease, dread, and... the desperate need to escape where I am and not being able to.
What happened at the medical seems to be tormenting Tony's subconscious. And after a few sleepless nights, something very disturbing happens.
I got a call from my agent, this was sort of maybe a week or so later, saying, all right, so you're going to do this film or not? I was like, what do you mean? Of course I am, yeah. This is like a big opportunity. So that's why, okay, but I've got the film company complaining you didn't turn up for the medical. I said, well, like, yeah, I did. Someone's mistaken. I did turn up. I told her the whole thing. I went out to bloody Essex and went right out there. And she was saying, no, you... Well, where was it then? And I sort of half described where it was. She said, no, you were supposed to go... I forwarded you the email. She didn't.
Right.
Or I didn't get it. I don't know what happened there, but she said, no, you're supposed to go to Sloane Square, that's where all of these things happen. And I went, well, yeah, of course, that's where I expected to go. But we laughed and, like, you know, she sort of just assumed I was being a ditzy actor.
Tony's left with the psychological aftertaste of an event in his life that that simply doesn't add up.
It did play on my mind quite a lot after that, and I did have that dream quite...